Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is, of course, a harvest festival celebrating bounty. There's also this vague piece of it, vague for most Americans, having to do with pilgrims and Indians, right? Let me read you one paragraph from the website of the National Museum of the American Indian. This is about how to teach Thanksgiving in grade school. And it says, most texts and supplementary materials portray Native Americans at the gathering as supporting players. They're depicted as nameless, faceless, generic Indians who merely shared a meal with the intrepid pilgrims. The real story, it says, is much deeper, richer, and more nuanced. The Indians in attendance, the Wampanoag, played a lead role in this historic encounter, and they had been essential to the survival of the colonists during the newcomers' first year. The Wampanoag were a people with a sophisticated society who had occupied the region for thousands of years. They had their own government, their own religious and philosophical beliefs, their own knowledge system, and their own culture. They were also a people for whom giving thanks was a part of daily life. Just one paragraph from the large and beautiful website of the National Museum of the American Indian, that little bit pertaining to Thanksgiving. And it goes on from there. So this year, Thanksgiving coincides with the start of commission hearings here in New York on what to do about statues and other monuments around the city that glorify racism or other forms of subjugation, including of Native Americans. So my next guest will be one of the people testifying at one of those hearings next week, at least about Columbus and Theodore Roosevelt statues. We'll see if any others. She is Betty Lyons, head of the American Indian Law Alliance. She's from the Onondaga tribe and lives upstate near Syracuse. Ms. Lyons, thanks very much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And as a starting point, your article points out that New York City has more Native Americans than any other city, even though we might think of the West as the epicenter of Native peoples today. Who lives here?
That is correct. New York City. Well, first, I'm going to correct you a little bit. I'm not from a tribe. I'm from a nation. The word tribe was given to us by the United States government to kind of diminish our status. And so every time I hear that word, I cringe because I'm not a citizen of the United States. I'm a citizen to my own nation. But there are over 120,000 indigenous peoples living in the city of New York, and they come from all over North and South America. We have many different sisters and brothers from all over the area. We have quite a few from Haudenosaunee territory, which are comprised of our six different nations.
So I apologize about nation versus tribe. Do you not consider yourself a citizen of both?
No, I don't. I'm a very proud citizen of my nation. Our nation has kept their sovereignty and is autonomous, and we have our own system of government that we've had for thousands of years. And so I participate in my own government.
And as far as Native Americans who live in New York, it's diverse. It's like anybody else who lives in New York. People are coming from all over to here, right?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. And so when they see that, you know, Columbus has celebrated all of the atrocities that he brought with them under the guise of the doctrine of discovery, it's very hard for our folks to kind of understand why he's so celebrated.
And so would I not be appropriate to say, would it not be appropriate if I said Happy Thanksgiving to you? Do you not celebrate that as a holiday?
No, our family definitely celebrates Thanksgiving with our family, but Thanksgiving for us is something that we practice on a daily basis. We give thanks to all of the things that Creator has provided for us here on Earth, the animals, the wind, the water, the trees, the medicinal plants. It keeps you centered and mindful of where you stand in the world. It comes from a very different perspective that we are all connected, and that we as humans, this is our strong belief, we're not above any other living being. We are equal to all other living beings. We just have different sets of responsibilities.
So let's open the phones for any other Native Americans listening right now. Do you celebrate Thanksgiving? If so, how do you celebrate Thanksgiving? How would you like everyone else to honor Indigenous Americans on Thanksgiving as part of what they do? And what would you like to see done with any of the city's statues and monuments, which we're going to get into here next? 212-433-WNYC, specifically for the next few minutes for any Native Americans listening right now. 212-433-9692. And for Betty Lyons, head of the American Indian Law Alliance, and from the Syracuse area. I see that you had an op-ed on the local news website City and State that focuses on two people and their related monuments, who you're going to testify here about next week, Christopher Columbus and also Theodore Roosevelt. And I think we're pretty saturated with the Columbus stories from Columbus Day, which was just last month. So can you start with Theodore Roosevelt?
Certainly. Theodore Roosevelt, there is a statue outside of the Museum of Natural History with an indigenous person on one side and an enslaved black man on the other side. It's really offensive because it just continues to depict the domination and superiority, of what is everyone's mindset regarding both of our races. And so, you know, it's very hurtful for our children to see this statue. I have a 6-year-old and a 16-year-old, and well, 7. I'm sorry, he just turned 7. He'll be upset if I don't say that. But you know, they question these things all the time. They question it in school. They question it when they see monuments. And it's discussions that we really, really need to have. Continuing to celebrate, you know, these kinds of monuments and celebrating Columbus, it's like the continued act of erasure that comes to ensure that Americans will never be educated on the reality of our harsh shared history. The Papal Bulls set forth a mindset and perception that indigenous peoples, such as myself, were not human and therefore not equal to all other peoples. And that's why you see Teddy Roosevelt sitting on the horse, you know, the big horse, and we're, you know, depicted as standing underneath him. So, you know, as my uncle always says, what he calls the doctrine of discovery is the best kept secret in American history.
And we'll get specifically into the doctrine of discovery in a minute. But, you know, soon your 7-year-old's going to say to you, Mom, I'm not 7. I'm 7 1/4.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, he just has such a keen awareness of what's happening today. He recently, we were walking through the grocery store, and he said to me, I really feel sorry for, you know, black people. And I said, why is that? And he said, because they have to live under, you know, white man's rules. And, you know, for a 6-year-old, at the time he was 6, for a 6-year-old to be able to process what all of that is and what it means, it's because we're affected by this doctrine that we're going to talk to in a little bit. It speaks to that, like, and how it affects our everyday lives, and that people can't really wrap their head around it or can't comprehend what that means, you know?
Before we get to the doctrine of discovery per se, just staying on the Theodore Roosevelt statue for a minute, do you happen to know the origins of it and why the black and native people were included in that way that they were?
No, I don't know the origins of it, which is, it's funny that you should say that, because I've certainly researched the Columbus statue in New York City, the one that's in Syracuse, New York, but I have not researched that.
What would you like to see done with that statue?
Well, you know, the Theodore Roosevelt statue in particular,
yes.
That one?
Yep.
Well, you know, I think that these statues can be used as a teaching tool, because this is kind of emotion that it evokes in me and my children, and I think it would be important maybe to take these statues and put them in a museum, where a teaching museum, I don't even like to say the word museum, but or a teaching facility like the Scano Center in upstate New York, located on the shores of Onondaga Lake, where we could have these discussions about, you know, what is this, what does that mean, you know, what does this racism look like, so that it doesn't happen again, it stops happening. I really believe through education we can change the future for our children.
Have you approached the museum directly? This is something we could look into here further. I don't know if you've been involved with this or the Law Alliance that you run. Approaching the museum directly or anyone before the city set up this commission process?
We've certainly been working. Yeah, this isn't a fight that we just started, you know, to educate the public on these important matters. excuse me. We've been doing this for quite some time. Even in the 90s, you know, there was talk of educating folks and trying to have them understand what these monuments really mean and how, what emotions that they invoke in our folks and what it means to our kids to see that. And, you know, so it's certainly not something that we just started working on for sure. And then the educational aspect of it, we've been doing that for quite a long time. You know, we did a two-row campaign in just a few years ago, back in 2014, you know, to try to get people to understand where the beginning of our relationships with the United States begin and how they begun. Because I really, really believe that if people don't understand the doctrine of discovery and don't understand what it meant, then, you know, that's a problem. It becomes a problem because they don't understand where our thoughts are coming from, where our feelings are coming from, and why they do the things that they do, because it's so, it's just embedded. I call it embedded in our DNA, in everybody's DNA, and it's very sad, and I think that once we start talking about these things, we'll be able to change that trajectory.
Our guest, Betty Lyons, head of the American Indian Law Alliance, she'll be testifying at Mayor de Blasio's Statues and Monuments Commission next week. Okay, the doctrine of discovery. I've strung you along long enough, which originated in the 1400s with the Catholic Church?
Yes, in 1452. By Pope Nicholas V, where it basically says to reduce any Saracens and pagans and any other unbelievers to perpetual slavery, giving them the right to occupy and own our lands, that basically that they would be found void, or the term that they used was terra nullius. They didn't see us as human beings. We weren't considered to be equal to all other human beings. And we see that play out. I mean, it's exactly how we're treated today in different fora.
And did Columbus have the doctrine of discovery in mind as kind of a legal basis for his right to conquer? Or was it all wilder and more improvised than that? Because I know you'll also be testifying next week about Columbus Avenue, Columbus Circle, Columbus Statue.
Yes, so the doctrine was put into effect by European monarchies. So in order to legitimize the colonization of lands outside of Europe, we always say between the mid-15th century and to today, this idea allowed European entities to seize lands inhabited by indigenous peoples under the guise of the doctrine. And yes, definitely he was aware of this doctrine, and that's what he went after our lands with in the New World, and really what it's speaking of is also the enslavement of you know, when they went to Africa to enslave people and bring them here. That same Pope wrote on January 5th of 1455 as a follow-up to the original papal bulls. That it extended the Catholic nations of Europe dominion over discovered lands during the Age of Discovery, along with sanctifying the seizure of non-Christian lands, and it encouraged the enslavement of native and non-Christian peoples in Africa and in the New World, and it pretty much lays it out. I mean, it talks about you know, all the things that they can possess and have domination over, because that's what we like to call it, is the doctrine of dominations, reducing their persons to perpetual slavery and to apply and appropriate to himself and to his successors. This is what it actually says. The kingdoms, dukedoms, counties, principalities, dominions, possessions, and goods, and to convert those to his and to their use and profit.
Now,
I mean, so imagine that, you know, like...
Not to mention that it was the church thinking it had authority over people or lands outside of Europe, never mind people or lands at all, that the church, as opposed to civic government, would control. As you know, Pope Francis has apologized for crimes committed against indigenous peoples by the church. How important do you think that has been? Is it just lip service? Is there more that you want him to do?
Absolutely. There is so much more that we want him to do. You know, if that could be reversed, you know, clearly it's already within the U.S. system of law and system of land title in this country. But going forward, it would certainly change. It would change the history, the future history of this country and the lands. You know, I always think back to what's happening in Canada and the continued land grabbing by companies and the government there, even under, you know, decent government. It's so hard to break free of this doctrine because it's so embedded in absolutely everything that is done to us and in the thoughts and minds of people that deal with us. And I don't even know if they recognize where this comes from, but we really believe that the Pope has the opportunity to do something different, and we're hoping that he does. We're certainly asking him and pressuring him to do so.
Jose in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jose.
Hey, how you guys doing? I wanted to just make a quick comment on, you know, first of all, the guest that you have has articulated all the points that a lot of educated Native American people would like to have the same platform within their own communities, because unfortunately, as was mentioned by your speaker, a lot of us have become very distant from, you know, our Native traditions, and it's unfortunate. So as it relates specifically to the Thanksgiving holiday, what I wanted to say is that, you know, our family, while we do celebrate and use it as an excuse to gather together, I think the traditions of what's celebrated today have changed significantly from what they originated in. So that being said, I think it's also important that we educate the general population on the traditions of and roots of you know, a lot of the things that your guest was discussing earlier.
Mm-hmm. How did you grow up with Thanksgiving in your family? What Native American nation are you from?
Apache. Mm-hmm. From northern New Mexico, there are several different branches of Apache, and my family happens to be from the northern New Mexico, southern Colorado region, and my great-grandmother as well as my grandmother try to keep those traditions involved with our family today. But to be honest, when people ask me what's my ethnicity, I just say I'm American. And when I'm traveling, it's really a frustrating experience for me, because abroad and even in the United States, people will say, okay, well, where are you from? Well, I'm from here. Where are your parents from? I'm from here. Where are their parents from? They're all from here. And while I have a mixed background of different ethnicities, it's a question that I find rather frustrating when, you know, particularly when abroad, when they say, well, you don't look American. It's like, well, what does an American look like? An American to them is blonde hair, blue eyes, and different from the way I look.
Right. Thank you for your call, Jose. Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Any other Native American listeners right now want to call in and say how you celebrate Thanksgiving in your family? Do you celebrate Thanksgiving? Are there different things that your family does than non-Native American families might do, given the origin story of the holiday? How would you like everyone else to honor Indigenous Americans on Thanksgiving if they're not Native American? 212-433-WNYC. And how would you like to see the city deal with any of the statues and monuments that are relevant to your heritage? 212-433-9692. Let's take some pushback, Ms. Lyons, on your position on the Theodore Roosevelt statue from Steve in Wilton, Connecticut. Steve, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling.
Hey, Brian. Great speaking to you again, as always. Tabling the Columbus statue, I understand that. The Roosevelt statue, I have an issue with. I can understand the discomfort with, you know, an enslaved African-American and an American Indian as well. But a lot of Native Americans really revere President Roosevelt because of his embracing of the national park system and wildlife conservation and everything that came with it. They've always said that he had the spirit of a Native American. And, you know, perhaps, as you said, there's, you know, a teaching moment that comes with this. But, you know, how do we rectify that, you know, with some of these statues or images, that they actually are good people, and maybe the way it's depicted maybe needs to be changed?
Betty, go ahead.
Yes, that's right. You know, it is about the depiction. It's certainly not about, you know, Theodore Roosevelt. It's certainly about the depiction of, you know, how it's showing, and especially to our kids. I'm sure that you could relate this, you know, in your own life if your children or some young person in your life saw something like that and questioned, you know, why do we continue to do this, you know, because that's what it does for me. But I think that you're right. I don't think that a statue of Theodore Roosevelt is bad or wrong. I just think that the depiction of having, you know, an enslaved black man and an indigenous person on the other side is really the depiction that I want my kids to grow up with, because it affects their sense of self-worth. They totally understand what's happening in the world and what's happening around them, and that it somehow makes it okay that we are in the back of their minds that we're less than. My kids have always asked those questions, you know, why are we not considered equal? Why are we, you know, less than, even in the communities surrounding where we live? So, you know, it's a really good point. We're not against the actual statue itself, but our depiction in them.
And Steve, thanks for your call. I'm looking at a website, NativeAmericanNetRoots.net. I don't know if you know it or if this is something you consider accurate, but it says, Teddy Roosevelt and the Indians. In 1901, President William McKinley was assassinated and Theodore Roosevelt became the 26th President of the United States. He entered the White House better acquainted with both the Indian service sector, with the Indian service, later known as the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and Indians than any president since William Henry Harrison. While Roosevelt had a background with regard to Indian affairs, this was not one of his major interests. But in their annual report, the Indian Rights Association lauded the new president. No man in the country has a fuller or more practical sympathy with the Indians than President Roosevelt, nor a better understanding of their conditions and needs. So, I don't know.
Yeah, the other part of that, too, I guess, is, you know, when we're talking about all these monuments, like, we're not here to tell anyone if that they want to, you know, in terms of the Teddy Roosevelt statue, like, you know, if they want... Americans certainly are welcome and are allowed to celebrate him. You know, again, it just goes back to the depiction, to the depiction. And usually when it comes to the Teddy Roosevelt statue or other Columbus statues, usually, you know, black enslaved men and indigenous men are usually at the base of these statues, like, so it looks like they're standing literally on their heads. You know, there's one here in Syracuse that's like that as well. So it's upsetting. It's very upsetting, and that needs to change.
Mike in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, everyone. I had just told the screener about my particular take on the statues and
your background, forgive me, is Navajo. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that any statues that, you know, depict African Americans and Native Americans, you know, in the manner, you know, just described, should go. There's no debate about that. But one of the things that I was saying was that the Italian community and Native American community have to sit down together and work this out one way, because even though that's a source of pride for them, I'm not talking about that statue, but just a, you know, singular statue of Columbus, source of pride for them, it's a source of great pain for Native people. And, you know, I can't forget the first time I went to the Dominican Republic and I looked out over the Atlantic Ocean and I thought about all the sorrow that was brought from that ocean. But, you know, I feel that that's something that we have to work out, and where it's an egregious case such as that, those statues should go. That's not about ethnic pride or anything like that. And I think the communities have to just recognize each other's situation. And I think the way to do it, though, first is not to deface the statue. Go to the Italian-American organizations and have an outreach. They should outreach to us. We definitely can outreach back to them and explain how we see this. As it comes to Thanksgiving itself, you know, it's something that I'm somewhat acculturated, so my family, we celebrate it as a time for family to get together, and then, but always with the knowledge that, you know, this is where Native people were helping out immigrants, unwanted immigrants who came here as refugees. And I think that sort of justifies our position on it, and it's very timely that that's the case. Last thing I was going to say
That's a really good current hook, by the way.
Right, and last thing I was going to say is I can relate to the Apache who called up earlier, because I just got back from a long trip to Asia, and I'm always getting, you know, people saying to me, oh, where are you from? You know, what country? Oh, what about your parents? What about your grandparents? You know, and you have to go through this endless thing, and I do say I'm American. You know, I always say I'm American, and they said, but you don't look American. You know, you look Thai, or you look Filipino, or you look... you know, you look Asian or something. Are you sure you're not? You know, and in a way, that's kind of cool. But it's the kind of thing that, yeah, you know, we don't look. They think that Americans are all blonde hair and blue eyes. So I've been sending photos to my friends back in Asia of the New York City subway so they could see that New York is not just folks who look like the guy who plays Thor.
And
even though
you
he's
have
not even American.
A lot of subway lines in Queens from which to choose to take those pictures. Mike in Queens, thanks for calling up.
Okay, thank you.
And Betty Lyons, head of the American Indian Law Alliance. We're just about out of time, but you want to react to Mike?
Yeah, I just think that it's, you know, it makes me, I think that what he said was like right on and perfect, because we here in our area help, you know, immigrants here even today. They were fishing in our sacred lake. It's like the most polluted lake, one of the most polluted lakes in the world. And, you know, to try to have them understand that the fish are contaminated because the county wouldn't take care of that and didn't feel that it was necessary to put up appropriate signs. And so, you know, we still do that. Like, that's still our charge. That's still our responsibility, and that's how we look at it. But it also made me sad that they don't identify as, you know, who they are from their nation. And so I would invite them to say that they are citizens of the Navajo Nation or citizens of the Apache Nation, because that's where they come from. These are very strong, we have very strong lines to that. And just to let the viewers know that this is something that we deal with every day, and that we get that it's hard for them to wrap their heads around. And like the last caller said, that it's important that we sit down and have these important discussions, and that we're not really asking for reconciliation, because it's impossible to reconcile something, you know, the atrocities that have happened, but, you know, and the unspeakable horrors. But that they're not deserving of celebration. I mean, even in Columbus's own journal, he talks about putting into sex slave a 9-year-old girl. I mean, so to us, it's beyond offensive. And so I think that it's right that we should all sit down and have these important conversations to change and to really get out the real history here.
Well, now New York City is having that conversation. So good luck next week when you testify at Mayor de Blasio's Statues and Monuments Commission. And thanks for coming on and giving us a little preview.
Thank you so much. And I would also suggest that the listeners here look at we did a movie called The Spirit Game Movie. And it's the doctrine of discovery is woven into the story of a world lacrosse championship. And you can actually see how it affects us on every day.
Thanks so much.